Hello and welcome to Jimmy's Three Things. My name is Jimmy. I got three things in the baseball world I'm going to talk about today. Shota Imanaga is absolutely on fire. Catchers blocking balls with runners on base. And then going to look at some detailed standings and just see what I can find. Jimmy's Three Things is a production of Dan Patrick Productions, John Boy Media, and Workhouse Media. So thank you very much for joining. If you enjoy the show, you can subscribe. Also, if you want the audio-only version, it's on its own podcast feed now. It used to be part of the Talkin' Baseball podcast feed. It's on its own podcast feed now, so you can find it there. If you're joining from Dan Patrick Show, thank you very much. All right, I'm going to take a quick sip of my coffee so I get some energy, and then we're going to go. Boom. All right, Shota Imanaga, and I hope I'm saying that good enough, is doing incredible things in Major League Baseball. So if you're not a National League fan, if you're a fan that just kind of watches your own team and knows the guys in your division, and you're not watching the NL Central that much and you haven't fully tuned in, you're kind of like me. I haven't fully tuned in yet. Like, I haven't watched a start. I haven't dove into the numbers, but I was just perusing all the articles and all the stats, reading about this guy and what he's done. And as a guy, he seems awesome. Like, everyone remembers his opening press conference. If you don't, this is how it went.
Hey, Chicago. What do you say? Cubs gonna win today.
And I was in love with him. I was kind of like, maybe I doubted him earlier. I don't know. Maybe I didn't. Short pitchers are tough. They usually don't have longevity or success. He's 5'10". He's been crushing it so far. So as a guy, everything is awesome. Some other notes that I found about him just as a dude was he also studied the 2016 Cubs when he signed with them, and he fell in love with Zobrist and Zobrist's role and the fact that he was selfless and batted anywhere in the batting order and played any position on the field. And 18, the number 18 usually goes to aces in Japanese baseball culture. But he, like, called Zobrist and asked for it and gave him all this love, and Zobrist was like, that was awesome to be respected that way. He really appreciated it. I thought that was kind of cool. He also went to a Chicago Blackhawks game and heard their goal song, Chelsea Dagger. He said, I was able to go to a Chicago Blackhawks game. It's a song that I picked so fans will enjoy it. So just, you know, pandering in the best way, how like fans of a city want to be pandered to. Like, oh shit, he's all in on Chicago and other stuff. That's awesome. There was a note that he's in Arizona. He dropped by a local Arizona Target to buy his own football after seeing how much his teammates enjoyed tossing one around. And his teammates say he's funny. He's got some good quotes. He screamed in his home opener after the mound, after getting the last out of the inning. They asked him what he yelled. He said, I'm not sure what I yelled, but afterwards I said, let's go. So I think I'm becoming a little bit more acclimated to the culture in the U.S. So, yeah, you scream, let's go. You fit in. Imanaga is nicknamed the throwing professor. Professor is Kyle Hendricks, which is what I was going to say the next sentence. He's nicknamed the throwing philosopher. So they have the throwing philosopher and the professor. Cubs love themselves some smart pitchers. All right. So as a person, there's like just a ton of fun anecdotes in the short time he's been around the media writing about him. As a pitcher so far this season, some of the stuff is just absolutely incredible. He leads the league in ERA right now with 0.84 after nine starts. He leads the league in ERA plus, which is adjusted, and 100 is average. He's 498, so he's 398% above average. It doesn't really make sense, but yeah. And then his FIP, which is fielding independent pitching. So like, if he had no fielders or if they made every play, if he had no fielders, so just on strikeouts, walks, home runs, is that what FIP is? I know what it is, but I'm blanking on it right now. Oh, it's a stat that measures a pitcher's effectiveness at preventing home run, walk, hit by pitch, and causing strikeouts. Yeah, 3-2 outcome, 2-2-2, which is the Leeds MLB. That's crazy. There's also some other stats I found about like how he gets the job done. Hitters have swung at 76% of Imanaga's pitches in the zone. So when he's in the zone, which he's in the zone, I think, second most out of any qualified starting pitcher, or maybe the most. But when he's in the zone, he's getting more swings than any other pitcher. And on those swings, he has allowed a slugging percentage of just .269, which is the best among qualified starting pitchers. League average is .441, and he's at .269. League average swings generated at pitches in the zone is 67% of pitches in the zone get swung at, and his is 76. So sounds like he's a fan's player attitude-wise and a fan's pitcher to watch, because I like when guys throw strikes and attack batters and generate swings and bad contact. That's what he said in one of his quotes that I read while reading all about him and in his interviews and stuff, was he was like, I'm trying to hit the bat, just not where they want the ball to get hit. He said it more eloquently than me in his second language than I did in my first, but it was that sentiment. Opponents have a first pitch chase rate of 26%. That means the pitch is out of the zone, but they're swinging at it. So he's enticing them, and they're swinging at it even though it's not in the zone. That's the highest among starting pitchers. So on the first pitch, they're going up there, I'm going to get this guy, and he throws his splitter. It looks like it's in the zone. It goes out, and they swing. 26%. League average is 15%. Imanaga has allowed an OPS of just .279 when going through the lineup the first time in a game, which is the best amongst qualified starting pitchers. And he has allowed just an OPS of .313 versus the bottom of the order this season, which is the best among starting pitchers in Major League Baseball. And I was actually looking at his splits. Let's see if I can pull them up real quick, because I was just trying to look at his splits page to see if I could find anything. And that is the one thing that stood out to me. Like nine-hole hitters, he's given up one hit to a nine-hole hitter all season in 18 plate appearances, 17 at-bats. One hit. Who was it? I wonder if I can find that easily. Let's see. Shota, Imanaga, Clear. I think they do allow you to do this. Don't care what venue it was in. Metric range, batting order, lineup position. So we'll just say nine. Plate appearance result, base hit. Let's find out who the nine-hole hitter is that got a hit off of Imanaga. The only one to do so this season. It was, drum roll, Luis Arraez. What? Did he pinch hit?
Arraez here. On the ground corner, diving. And that one squirts under his glove. And
Okay. I'm calling shenanigans. Because I did a lose. He's on batting ninth for the Padres. Oh, I have his game log up. So it was against the Padres on May 7th, and Luis Arraez pinch hit for Kyle Higashioka. So the one hit he's given up to a nine-hole batter was a pinch hitter, and it was the two-time batting champ. So shenanigans. I'm glad I looked up who got the hit, and we deep dove into that stat. He just kills the bottom of the order, which again is like a fan's pitcher. Don't let these guys beat you. Just fucking... No, don't take your foot off the gas because you think the competition's lighter. Gerrit Cole had that problem in 2021, I think. I think it was 2021, Gerrit Cole. Like, all his homers came from, like, the nine-hole or the eight-hole hitter. It was like, come on, man. Because he would just feed him fastballs. I think it was 2021. Oh, I think it was this year. The 7-8-9 had a higher OPS than the 3-6. And he gave up 12 home runs to the 7-8-9 hitters, and 7 to the 1-2, and 14 to the 3-4-5-6. So yeah, it was that year with Gerrit Cole. And it was frustrating because it was like, he very good season, but it's like, dude, get those guys out. So that's what Imanaga's doing, which is awesome. Seems just like a fan's dream. Look at this game log. 7 innings pitch, 0 earned runs. 4 innings pitch, 0 earned runs. Note, only 43 pitches. Rain delay killed that one. 5.1 innings pitch, 0 earned runs. 6 innings pitch, 2. 6.1, 1. 7, 0, 7, 2, 5, 0, 7, 0. I love when I go Mike Francesa and just shout numbers and people are like, Jimmy, we can't keep up. But I'm sorry. His worst game, as far as earned runs go, 6 innings pitch, 2 earned runs. maybe. I mean, in that game, he gave up 5 hits. In this game, he gave up 7 hits, but he struck out 8 and had more innings pitched. I like looking at this part of Baseball Reference sometimes. They have, like, when he exited over here. He exited tie game, up by 5, up by 1. So, because the Cubs aren't, like, crushing it. They're winning all his starts. But his last, so his last 4 outings, he exited the game. It was tied, down 1, ahead 1. I'm saying this to further illustrate that he's pitching in close games. The margin for error is small, and he's still performing in that situation. It's not like the Cubs are giving him 7-0 leads. If the Cubs were giving him, like, you know, 4-0 leads after 2 innings, then you would say, dude, just throw strikes, make them hit it. But he's pitching in close games and still just throwing strikes and making them hit it. Very impressive. Okay, so how does he do it? What's his repertoire? He must throw really fast. No, he doesn't throw fast at all. This article by David Adler's How a 92-mile-per-hour fastball became MLB's most valuable pitch. He's 5'10". His heater isn't that slow, but it's got really good ride or rise on it. And he's short, and he throws kind of sidearm, so he extends a lot. So he's got an arm angle that is unique, which I read all this, and I was kind of like, I don't know about that. It's the same as Chris Sale's, because he's like a sidewinder from the lefty side. And it makes his fastball ride, so it has the appearance of rising, staying through the zone, because the spin rate is really good. And he pounds the zone with that, so it's a funky arm angle. And then he matches his splitter, and lefty splitters are very rare. I remember I did a pitching list show, and we were talking about lefty splitters, and the only one we came up with that threw majority splitters was Chasen Shreve. There hasn't been a starting pitcher that throws splitters lefty in a long time. There's actually, this article has a graph of it. Okay, they have a lot of graphs. Cool. I like this article. Good job, David Adler. I like your article. Okay, some good graphics here. Here it is. Left-handed starting pitchers with 100-plus splitters thrown in an MLB season since 2008 when they started tracking them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pitchers, and none of them threw it nearly as often as Imanaga's throwing his. Here's a pitching ninja shot of the splitter. You can see the fingers split, and his right finger is on the lace a little bit, and his pointer finger, and then his middle finger is kind of on the other side of the horseshoe. And it's just going to tumble and dip, and it goes underneath the fastball, which stays true and rides. I made my own overlay that I'll show you, but there are some good graphs. And he's just got good location. Look at this. Fastball's up in the zone, splitter's low. How has he never thrown a split finger in that quadrant? Never even messed up at all. And yeah, these are his pitches. Really cool. Really cool stuff. There was a quote I liked about it in another article. Is this an overlay? I didn't watch this video. So that's a fastball in, and it's just kind of sneaking up. That's what they're showing here on Alonso. Oh, and then the splitter, and he's early on the splitter, late on the fastball. Wow, look at all this data. I have access to those bat paths. I've never thought to do what Adler just did. That's cool. They were talking about his pitch mix a lot in this article, and it is cool because he wants to get ahead, and then once he's ahead, it's like a 50-50 split on what you're going to get. So 0-2 count, you can see the green and the red here, fastball and splitter. 1-2, 2-2, those are the, you know, ahead in the count, and it's not like he's going to one or the other more than the other. So everything's just kind of going right, but I think it's cool that he's a fun guy and he's a fun watch. Sometimes pitchers are good and they're really boring watches. Kuroda. It was a boring watch, but his results were good. Here's the overlay I made against the Padres. So this is a fastball just up in the zone, 90 miles per hour. Not that fast. I think that's pro far batting, taken the whole way. Okay. And now this is a different at bat, but it's the same venue, so I could overlay it nice. This is the splitter, and you can see that little dip, 83 miles per hour. Boom, but a little dip. Here's the overlay of the two. 90 miles per hour, 83 miles per hour. That's cool. Very cool. So if you haven't watched a start by him, you should go watch a start by him because it's very fun. There was a quote I liked that led me down this path the other day. An article on The Athletic. Let me make sure to shout out who wrote it. Where do they put the author name? Okay. Patrick Mooney wrote it. But there was just a quote from Imanaga that I thought was funny because he's talking about how, like, no one has done this. No one has started this hot since Valenzuela when he won Rookie of the Year. Fernando Valenzuela had a 0.91 ERA in 1981 after his nine games, and he won the National League Cy Young and the Rookie of the Year. So they're talking about how, like, it's crazy how little people have had starts like this. And his quote about it was, if I'm being honest, I'm not really too interested in my own stats or any historic value, but just knowing that there are so many good pitchers that came before me is a good learning experience. I was kind of like, obviously there's a language translation, but I inferred that as just like, damn, that's kind of like really cocky. Cause you could infer it as like, I didn't know there's good guys before me. That's cool. Cool to learn. I thought, you know, but I think he's definitely meaning it not in that way. All his other quotes on that, just meaning it like, cool to learn about guys I didn't know about. Oh yeah. People have done this for, like, oh yeah, this league's littered with good players, or just can go look around and see what they're doing. So go watch yourself an Imanaga start if you want, because he is awesome. Okay. Next up, I saw this. I love looking at catcher data, and I sometimes just go look at, like, the best blocks or the best throws or the best whatever. I just like watching catchers play. I really appreciate the position. And then this pitch by Glasnow, there's a runner on third, one out, 2-2 count. And this pitch by Glasnow is
spiked
like crazy. Spiked like crazy, and Barnes makes the stop. Or is that Smith? Barnes, I had it right, makes the stop to keep the runner at third. And the reason why I'm showing you this is because that is the most spiked ball of the season with a runner on third, and the catcher blocked it. Now, it's so spiked, it kind of ramps up just right into his belly. But I was going through a lot of data, and I was trying to find, and I couldn't really come to a conclusion with my research, so I'm not going to include all of it. But I wanted to find the catchers, and I did find this answer, but it didn't lead to anywhere more fun. The catchers with a runner on third who call the most or have received the most breaking pitches way in front of the plate. Because a lot of times in big moments, close games, runner on third, the pitcher is going to shy away from throwing something in the dirt. A-Rod had a big at-bat in the World Series in 2009 where he talks about this, where Damon double stole, went from second and then stole third. And now A-Rod told himself they're not going to throw breaking balls low because they don't want this run to score on a pass ball or wild pitch. So he's going to have to be in the zone. So I'm going to be ready to swing. So I wanted to see what catchers are calling or receiving the most pitches in the dirt when a runner is on third. I guess I'll share the data with you guys at this point because I do have that. I thought it would lead to maybe better conclusions, but it did not. So I thought it would lead to, like, okay, Jeffers has the lowest percent of balls in the dirt when there's a runner on third. So then I wanted to go to the Twins. Here it is. I wanted to go to the Twins, like, their offensive numbers when there's a runner on third, and see, like, are they not good? But they were middle of the pack. The worst two teams with a runner on third were the Astros and the Rockies, and then their catchers were, like, yeah, not the top of the list. Anyway, Yan Gomes, one out of four pitches with a runner on third is a breaking ball in the dirt, which is crazy. So Yan Gomes is just, like, constantly telling his pitchers, like, trust me, just trust me, I gotcha. And then blocking it. And then you go down, like, he's got 24%. It's a big outlier. Not that many pitches though. Like, you see the catchers with the most pitches, it's Shea Langeliers, and he's at 9%, but he doesn't call for that many. Logan O'Happy, 7%. But percentage-wise, I cut out catchers who haven't received at least 100 pitches with a runner on third. And you get down to the bottom, and Jeffers has received, he has 108 pitches that were in the dirt. No, he's received 108 pitches with a runner on third, and only six were breaking balls in the dirt, which is 5%. Yeah, that's what I did. So I didn't really get to a conclusion with this info, but I did while going through this info, I did run into this cool stat. So one, I saw that Barnes block, and that was cool. And then I tried to find Gomes calls for a ton of breaking balls in the dirt with a runner on third, just tells his pitcher, catch me. And then I ran across this leaderboard, and Bo Naylor, Travis d'Arnaud, Carson Kelly, Yan Gomes, Henry Davis, and Jose Trevino are all 100% at blocking balls in the dirt so far this season. I'm not sure how they're counting balls in the dirt. There has to be a cutoff. It's not just any ball in the dirt. So, like, this website has blocking chances, and all those guys 100%. Bo Naylor, 27 out of 27. Travis d'Arnaud, 27 out of 27. They're the top five. Now, worst is William Contreras. Only 75% of pitches in the dirt has he blocked. Second worst, Jonah Heim. Third worst, Tucker Barnhart. 29th, Tyler Stevenson. And 28th, Keibert Ruiz. I was interested in that. And then I did a search where I searched balls that crossed the plate. You can do, as I've done on here before, you can do the X and Z axis where the balls cross the plate. And I searched by the balls that bounced the most. Oh, and I just changed a toggled something off. Because I toggled on balls in the dirt, but I didn't trust the way Baseball Savant does it. So I just toggled that off. And Austin Barnes, who I just showed you, has actually gotten beat now by a different Glasnow curveball. And this one, Will Smith was catching. So let's watch this one. Oh, this was in Korea. I don't think he blocked that. The umpire blocked that. So Smith doesn't get credit for that. So Glasnow just really will spike him every now and then. So I wanted to see what name comes up. Bo Naylor comes up a ton and his are kind of awesome to watch, these blocks. I have here's another site.
Wow, that was way out in front of the plate, and Bo Naylor.
That one's so funny. I mean, for those that are just listening, it sticks, another big tall-ass pitcher that throws curveballs like Glasnow, absolutely spikes one. Like 5 feet in front of the dirt, Bo Naylor gets in front of it with his chest protector. It hits his chest protector and then like his helmet a little bit, and he's in the air and his helmet falls off, and then he goes and grabs the ball. But yeah, it's pretty funny block. Bo Naylor had some other funny ones too. He doesn't have the most, but they're like kind of awesome when he does have them. Let me show the other two.
The best color scheme going in baseball.
No doubt about it.
Oof. Ooh, that's just picked. Inside picked. Oof. Catcher up. Shea Langeliers is up.
Right call. I mean, you got Brennan sliding out there. Freeman.
That one's nice and easy. Let's find. All right, I'm going to go to the leaderboard here. Where is it? Oh, my goodness. What page was I on? Too many tabs. He's got too many tabs open. I want to find, so the x-axis, I'm going to sort by the most, so negative 2.86 feet or whatever it is. So, and then I want to find, they were really to the left or the right. Like that Will Smith one was directly at him. This Nick Fortes one seems to be pretty way off. Oh, this one, okay. This Jonah Heim one, oh, it's a hit by pitch. And this one. So he didn't really block it, I guess. Maybe that's what I toggled off, and now I'm going to get bad results. These were really outside and inside, if that's what you want to call it.
Oh!
Okay, so the runner scores. But yeah, that's a crazy pitch. So maybe I did have it toggled on by only when the catcher makes the play before. I mean, this one is spiked and in the other batter's box. He almost gets a glove on it, but instead the runner scores. So not a highlight. And this one to Heim, Yordan Alvarez up. Is this the one they say hit by pitch? Yeah. So I definitely toggled off the thing that said, like, make sure they make the block. And that's my fault, you know? Here's a Jeffers one. Let's see if he makes this play. The numbers where it crossed the plate suggest this would be another kind of crazy play. Paddock on the bump.
That one's in the dirt. Gets by Jeffers.
And he didn't make it. The numbers were right. And then this one also suggests it would be a tough play. Did we already watch this one?
They had its change now. They changed out the
okay.
exhibits. But they
nice stop. Nice stop. We like that. Good shit. All right, so there's, I don't know, that was just a segment on catcher blocking that I couldn't figure out how to get a through line and like, you know, a conclusion. So instead, we just watched and looked at some stuff, and maybe I'll, if you have any ways you want me to dance around the catcher info, I can try and do more that comes to a conclusion. The third quick hitting topic I was going to do was I was just going to go through the detailed standings that and splits that Major League Baseball has, which I really enjoy looking at a lot. And if you've never seen this page, this is daunting, but they have, like, you know, currently wins, losses, streak. They have your simple rating system, whatever that is, strength of schedule. So the hardest strength of schedule so far this season, Blue Jays, Astros, Reds. At this point in the season, very much teams that don't win a lot and will have the harder strength of schedule because every time they lose, they make the other team stronger. Does that make sense since we're not like even halfway through? So Blue Jays, Astros, Reds, Oakland, White Sox have all lost a good amount of games. And so their opponents have good schedules. The outliers there would be the Marlins have lost a good amount of games, but their strength of schedule is at zero. The Rockies have lost a 31 games, which is the third most in baseball, and they have had a easy strength of schedule. How does that work? And the A's have lost 30 games, so they have a difficult strength of schedule. Some other outliers here. Let's see the other way. The Phillies have had the easiest strength of schedule. That's a big talking point. Dodgers, Yankees, Guardians. But it works the other way as well, where if you're winning, you're making your strength of schedule easier because the teams you beat, you're adding a lot of losses. So the Orioles seem like an outlier here because they've won 29 games, but this rates them as having a hard strength of schedule thus far. Same with the Mariners. So good for them. That's nice. And then you would go look at how are they faring against those teams. The Mariners over 500. Mariners are 12-6 versus teams over 500. That's pretty good. The Orioles are 13-10. That's good. It's not amazing. Who's got the best record? The Braves are 15-5 versus teams over 500. And the Yankees are 21-8. And then down here, the Rockies are 5-19. That's not good at all. 5-19. And the Phillies are only 4-2, teams above 500. They haven't played a lot. That's a big storyline. The Orioles are 16-6 versus teams over 500. I was doing that opposite the whole way, wasn't I? So the Orioles are beating up on good teams, but losing to bad teams. Yeah, I was doing that opposite. And that's what's going to happen on the show. You're going to run into me just being dumb for a couple seconds. Sometimes I catch myself, sometimes I don't. I like looking at this stuff. What I noticed the most was that the Cincinnati Reds are 1-11 in one-run games. 1-11 in one-run games. Their bullpen must stink, huh? 1-11 and their offense, too? That's to be in that many one-run games sucks, but 1-11, only win one one-run game? Meanwhile, the Phillies are 10-4. Mariners, Rays are 9-4. Home record, is any team awful at home? Yeah, the Angels are 6-16 at home. Not good. Not good. Versus left-handed pitching, who's the best? Guardians, Angels, Dodgers 13-5. Wow, the Marlins are 1-16 versus left-handed pitching. 1-16 versus left-handed pitching. They've won one game when a lefty starts. Holy shit, that's awful. Batting splits, Miami Marlins, platoon splits versus left-handed starter. This is the best. Jazz Chisholm has the best stats versus left-handed starter. Arise ain't bad. He's gone. Bummer. All right, that was Jimmy's three things. Thank you for tuning in. Send requests for next week. Check in on some stuff. Congrats to Bo Naylor, Shota Imanaga, and the Orioles.